Hi everyone, thank you so much for coming to this session. Welcome to the Professional Development and Careers Theatre, sponsored by C&D, with kind support from Well Pharmacy. I'm Beth Kennedy, I'm the editor of C&D, and I'm going to be chairing today's big debate, the C&D Live big debate on whether pharmacy education is fit for purpose. I'm going to introduce our speakers in just a minute, but just before I do, a little bit of context about why we're having this conversation today. So we all know that pharmacy education and training has changed at pace over the past few years. There's been a real shift towards independent prescribing. We're seeing that in MPharm courses, but also there's a push towards that in post-qualification training as well. And I think really we just want to be talking about this and debating about this and really whether these guys think that education is keeping up with that level of change. What needs to change, timescales I think should be for that. These guys are experts in the field. So we have with us today my colleague Nana Ofori-Atta. I'm going to let him introduce himself.
Hi everyone, my name is Nana. I'm the Clinical and Custom Content Editor at C&D.
I'm always impressed when you manage to...
It's such a mouthful.
Yeah. And we'll go over to Marvin now.
Hi everyone, my name is Marvin. I'm the co-founder of Pre-Med Shortcuts. We train trainee pharmacists, support them to be effective clinicians.
And we'll go over to Zaire.
Hello, my name is Gia. I am the founder of Revise Pharma, and we help trainees turn into pharmacists.
Okay, great, thank you so much. So let's begin at the beginning. So we'll start with the MPharm course. We know that there's been a lot of changes, so none of our panelists here today were on the courses, obviously, when it was going through the change into baking in that independent prescribing qualification. So maybe actually let's take it back to when you guys were training. Do you think that the training that you had as pharmacists was fit for purpose?
So going all the way back to the university level.
Yeah.
So there'll be a few things that I would say that probably aren't as relevant to me right now. So I do remember many times worrying that I couldn't be a pharmacist because I didn't know the rules of thermodynamics, which I'm pretty sure most pharmacists don't know anymore. But when I was in my first year of university, I had to know every single equation of the rules of thermodynamics for a specific topic. And I was wondering to myself, why do I need to know this? And why are people being kicked off the MPharm degree for not knowing this? Is it really relevant? So that's my obviously strong input against. Maybe some things aren't too relevant. But yeah, that's my...
This is a guy who famously, you aced your calculation, how much percent
exactly.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, only got 100% in
you
calc.
You still have to learn it.
I love
deal,
telling
no
everyone
deal.
That. Yeah.
I'll let you go, Marvin.
All right, so I'll be blunt and I'll be direct about this. 2011, that's when I qualified. That's when you had the change in reforms in the educational system. And the truth is, personally, it wasn't fit for purpose. Simply because the whole degree focused on learning but not applying. And I'm going to show you the difference between what you have now compared to what we had back then. So the biggest challenge we used to have was we had to learn practically, apply knowledge only once we're qualified, when we're training pharmacists. But at university, we didn't have to apply as much. So I remember when I was at uni, I did about 4 weeks placement in my entire four-year degree. And you cannot develop clinical skills without being in a clinical setting.
No.
So it wasn't fit for purpose. The new changes are a lot better.
Yeah. I unfortunately had a very different experience to Marvin. I qualified 2011 too, but I did a foundation pharmacy degree. So I started as a foundation student, which meant that as part of my training, I had to do 30 days in a pharmacy. So for my first year, I spent every 2 days of every week in a pharmacy. And I think that changed my whole pharmacy experience because I got a lot of practical experience. But I have to say, once I entered the MPharm course, a lot of my colleagues that graduated with me had the same problem of not having any practical skills when they went in the pharmacy. Because I remember my first day as a qualified pharmacist, I was quite comfortable because I spent so much time in a pharmacy. But I had friends that were calling me going, I don't know what to do. Like, why am I here? So I think we all are of the agreement that the practical side of the pharmacy degree is one part that needs to be improved. I have to say recently, though, that has got a lot better with integrated learning in a lot of higher education facilities.
I don't know. So I graduated a lot later, maybe 10 years or so
show
later.
Show us how young.
Yeah. Ooh, bad.
Sorry. Maybe 10 years later. But even at that point, we would only have dispensary sessions once every 2 weeks. I personally got maybe half a day worth of hospital placement in my whole four-year degree. I had no knowledge about hospital pharmacy. I was just shadowing a medic student for half a day, and that was it. Over the 10 years, I'm not too sure how much has changed. I definitely had more physics or like organic chemistry lessons rather than actually being in a dispensary doing what actual pharmacists do.
Oh, we have a question from our audience. Oh, hang on. We've got a mic for you. We've got a mic coming.
Are we going to name?
Is this going to be the fight to the death about universities?
I know one of my old lecturers is actually here.
Which universities did you go to? Because I went to Nottingham. A lot of my friends went to Sunderland, and they had fun. I was miserable.
Who's going to go first?
You can go. All right, so I went to Kingston University.
Yeah, I was at Medway School of Pharmacy, Ken.
I went to East Anglia. Yeah.
So this is quite interesting. So all of you kind of touched on this, and to an extent, each of you in what you do works with students. And I'm really interested now to see that we are moving towards this MPharm, where the move towards independent prescribing is baked into that. Do you think that change has been positive? Do you think that it's moving towards that more practical way of learning that you guys have said is the way that it should be?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The main difference between now and then, it's all about being more practical. Now, we're trying to become very clinical, interprofessional, working with nurses, with doctors, communication skills. And if you look at the degree, a lot of changes have happened. So I was speaking to Professor Kayali, and she's at Kingston University. Just to show an example, in that university, from the first year, from now on, the new learning outcomes, they have to do placements from the first year. By the time you get to the fourth year, done almost about 16 weeks, they have interprofessional training. They have days where students now spend time with doctors and nurses. They have simulation rooms at university, where they literally have hospitals at university. They have community pharmacists at the university simulation. It's more experimental now. And they spend that all the time. Interestingly, we're never trained on leadership skills. The moment I become a pharmacist, the same year I became a pharmacy manager, without being trained on a single leadership training. Now at university, it is compulsory. Most fourth year degrees have a leadership training program. So the difference is vast.
Yeah.
The big problem we have, the GPS has got a criteria, and universities meet the criteria. The problem we have is, to develop clinical skills, you need a clinical setting. And now is the communication between our employers and university. So your university meets those standards, but the students don't have those placements, and the employers will not, well, financially, it's hard because they need to have the placement, but employers don't have the capacity to get the students to practice.
I'm about to shock. I completely disagree. I'm really sorry.
It's called the big debate. That's
really
why we're here,
sorry,
guys.
I think when it comes to the IP initiative and getting students to be IP when they qualify, I think the whole system, it's a case of they've put the car in front of the horse. They made a decision before the system was able to do it. So a lot of higher educational facilities are now scrambling to design a program to fit students that are going to come out as IPs. Now, I know people that did their IPs after a period of like working as pharmacists, and being an IP is not something that's easy. To integrate doing your IP course as well as doing an MPharm course, I think it's asking way too much of a student to do that in 4 years and to come out and have the skills to be able to practice and use it at the end of that 4 years. It's Doing an MPharm on its own is hard enough. To bake in doing an IP on top of doing an MPharm, I think it's just asking too much.
I think an MPharm is hard enough when you're integrating all the unnecessary things that they force you to jump through.
Yeah, but the IP, the get IP that is qualification. No remove, it's not removing the need for you to do chemistry. It's not removing the need for you
but
to do
physiology. But when have you ever needed to do organic chemistry as part of your day-to-day?
But you still have to do it as part of your MPharm.
But that's what I'm saying. The whole point is you have to remove that and replace it with something
absolutely,
that's actually
absolutely.
Useful.
I've been speaking to universities. I spoke to a few professors this week and last week. They've actually adjusted the program. Clinical skills training starts from the first year, and they have time to do that. So they're not expected to be able to be IP, like trained from the fourth year.
Yeah.
But during the foundation year, they'll have 90 hours. But the important thing is from the first year, the key skills, communication skills, they have more communication, more diagnostic skills that we never used to do. Now they do that from the first year. I've got a whole list here. They've got first aid training, ECG, right? First aid training, clinical reasoning, yeah. Consultation skills, prescribing skills, diagnostics have to be introduced from the beginning. If you do that over time, first year we've got doctors, we've got nurses. With the nurses, the reason why they're more clinical is because from the first year, they have about 12 weeks placement, and the second year, about 12 weeks. So when you see a junior doctor, you see a nurse that goes in the hospital, they're already part of the team. It's like integrated. They expect them because they've had that experience. With pharmacists, when we go for placements, we are observers.
Yeah.
So things are changing, but why is everything changing? Because now, at the universities, they started to introduce all of this. In fact, they don't even have as much lectures anymore. When I spoke to a university, they have more workshops because they know that it has to be through workshops and through placements. That's where we get those clinical skills. But they don't have to be that good at that stage. They just have to have the basic communications, diagnostics, interprofessional communication skills. And then they'll be ready. Then you have 90 hours of study. Your DP wants to do a foundation, and then they should be fine.
So something I do actually want to move on as well to some at some point towards independent prescribing training as well, because I know that that's something that a lot of people are now thinking about post-qualification, post-registration as a pharmacist. Before I do that, I'm just quite curious, in our audience, do we have any current pharmacy students who'd be happy to kind of tell us about their experience and whether they think that their education is fit for purpose or not? Do we have anyone wants to do that? Anyone? Yes, yes. Oh, we got a mic coming over to you now.
So I'm newly qualified, so, you know, pharmacy school isn't too far away. But I think that, yeah, I agree that with organic chemistry and everything, it's like when you're learning about the theory, a lot of the time you needed more time in placement. And I was the COVID year, so a lot of the placements were cancelled because, oh, we're so busy in the NHS. So I didn't get any clinical experience. Went into a pharmacy in pre-registration that was like the heat of, you know, all these prescriptions, 15,000 items a month, just dispense and go. No services. If I had been an IP, I would not have felt confident in the slightest at all.
Yeah. I'd actually quite like to ask Jir about that. So you started Revised Pharma during COVID years, right?
I did. So I started Revised Pharma during COVID because I thought that was a great time for everyone to spend their time on Instagram. And what I did, I made a page for people to just learn more. But it's interesting that you picked up on services. Pharmacy is moving more towards service-based earning, right? I mean, you dispense a prescription, you make pennies. You do a service, you make a lot more. But we're not really even taught the services whilst we're at university. So it's not just independent prescribing that we've got to worry about.
Yeah.
We need to be doing a lot more preparation on services. A lot can be said when I can literally say 4 years of university, I walked out not knowing anything. And then within half a year, I felt like I had learned 10 times as much than what I learned all the way throughout university just by being in placement. I didn't know what amlodipine was used for. I was like, oh, that's a common drug, right? Like, fast mover. Yeah. But that was about it. And then obviously when you're actually dispensing all these drugs, seeing what the prescriptions are looking like, that's when you actually learn. So, yeah.
I think that makes a very good point to what Marvin referred to when it comes to like, is the soft skills. So like at uni, we learned a lot of like theory, we learned a lot of things to do, but the thing that makes a difference when you're doing a consultation is the soft skills. is being able to empathize with a patient when they're in front of you. It's being able to make a patient feel relaxed and build rapport instantly with different patients from different walks of life. And these are the things that university doesn't really encompass, but from the evidence Marvin has brought, it seems that more it seems that more universities are incorporating that, which but can only be good also, for the sector.
Also, like when you're in an OSCE, for example, you put on the biggest OSCE performance of showing empathy. It was like, oh, you're feeling bad. Like you don't really feel natural practice of actually consoling a patient. Like you're putting on a bit of a show, to be honest, so that you get the marks. You can't really replace dispensary mocks and stuff like that with actual.
I think a good thing that some of the universities are doing is bringing in actors to play the OSCEs.
Yes, my university was bringing in actors. Yeah,
it changes
for sure.
The dynamic.
I'm going to throw a curveball in here. I hadn't even considered until now. But what do you guys think about the idea? It's been floated a few times over the years, and it's kind of stopped and started. But pharmacy apprenticeships.
You know what? I hate to say it because I've already paid so much for it, but it makes some sort of sense. Okay, you've got to have all the clinical knowledge as well, but at the end of the day, pharmacists learn better by being pharmacists.
I'm not a fan.
I mean, I'd be gutted.
No, I think there are different routes and there are different ways to skin a cat. There are different routes into pharmacy, but I think doing an MPharm degree and basically being able to gain the master's shows a certain level of skills that you need to have in order to be a pharmacist. I think just working in a pharmacy might give you a lot of skills, but I don't think it's enough for you to have to take on the responsibility of signing off on a medication for someone.
But if you pass the exam...
I think what we need to look at is... What we're looking at is medical students, looking at doctors. We're talking about working with doctors, nurses, and being at a level where we all have the same clinical efficiency. Pharmacists need to think high of themselves. As pharmacists need to think high of themselves. The reason why doctors and nurses are so clinical is because they spend so much time in a clinical setting. I was speaking to a doctor, and I told the doctor, I've only spent from my four-year degree 4 weeks in practice, and they were shocked. It's unheard to hear a doctor or a nurse that's only spent 4 weeks in hospital and is now a medical doctor. In fact, if you go to Cambridge University, I'm not a medic, we've got some medics here, but the last 3 years of the degree of foundation, clinical studies, they've got supervision, that's with a supervisor. And so it's very experiential. The only thing pharmacists lacked is we've not been applying stuff, but it's changed now. Yeah. The new reformation from 2021, so the pharmacists that are going to graduate out, be qualified in 2026, will be miles apart from those of us now. So this is going to take some time, but if you look at the program from the first year all the way to the fourth year, it's completely different. They apply and develop a lot of clinical skills.
I think there is a part that we're getting too excited about the IPs and the prescribing and all of that. And the clinical, everyone keeps using the word clinical part. But I think there's a bit that we're missing that, yes, doctors do a lot of stuff in practice because they're going to become doctors. The thing that makes pharmacists, because we're experts in medicine. That's why we do the chemistry. That's why we do the physics. That's why we learn the science behind the chemistry, because we spend the time doing that because the doctors don't do it. That's why we are the safety net. Mm.
Can you show me one example of where you had to use organic chemistry or physics? when you've had a patient and you've been like, basically, that's not working well for you because that's an angiotensin receptor blocker. And
No, the patient doesn't need to know that, but you need to know that in order to know what that interaction is.
Everything we do has to show value.
Yes.
Right? What is the common problem now with the NHS?
Okay, it's we needed that.
Yes. Kind of so that is what is. So to be modern, we need to look at. I want to spend time learning about a drug. I'd rather learn that time learning about diagnosing some skills, communication skills. So I could take some workload, and I could be practical.
But we can't lose the knowledge of knowing about the drug.
But that's why we have.
My thing is, we're not looking at the cost of what this change is giving us. Because I'm pro-change. I think pharmacists should move more into clinical space. But I think this is what I mean by we've put the cart in front of the horse. We're not looking at what that is going to cost us, knowledge-wise.
Yeah. I think knowledge-wise, at university level, that's fine.
Yes.
I think where the problem is when you start going to placements, because now there's got to be a connection. There's got to be collaborative working, which we've not done before, between the schools of training and the stakeholders. Now many pharmacists want to do independent prescribing. What's the biggest challenge? I can't find a DPP. Right. So it's about working with stakeholders, working with universities, and having the whole program together.
So this is brilliant. I definitely want to come back to that. We know the DPP thing is such an issue. I've seen a couple of hands in the audience. I just want to make sure that we're getting questions from our audience as well. Can we get the mic again, please? Just this lady here, please.
Hi. It was for you, Marvin. You know, you were talking about how you were comparing the degree to a medical degree and how they have a lot more practical experience. But we have a whole pre-reg year where we have a whole year of practical experience and we get paid for it. So could you, like, maybe compare, like, the medical degree where they have to do placement work in it, but they're having to work those long hours and pay for it, compared to the degree plus the pre-reg where we do get the year of practical application?
Okay, so, this is, I don't mean to discredit our program. Right? So we do get the year of application, but in terms of the clinical side of things, it does take time to develop what we have to do, to get that, to be able to work as a prescriber, and to be able to get patients to have that confidence in us. We need more experience clinically. So what we do now is not enough, because we get the knowledge, but in terms of the practice, if you had that practice throughout university, and you spent, in fact, I spoke to, again, Portsmouth University, what they're trying to do now is get the trainees to start placements from the first year and be in the same pharmacy all the way to the fourth year. You need to have more years of practice in able to have that confidence. That's why it's important with those skills.
I definitely think, like, as a prescriber, we need to be upskilled. But so I did a hospital pre-reg, and I felt like after that 1 year of pre-reg, I'd got the clinical skills. And I don't know if it was from, so I went to the University of Bradford, and for them, they had a really massive part on, like, soft skills. Yeah. So maybe that's why I got that professional development, but I don't really
agree. It's a very interesting one. This is another thing about pharmacy. You went to hospital. The many pharmacists are trained community. When we talk about pharmacies, we'll talk about clinical pharmacies, just one, we're all clinical. What happens to those that go to community? It's a well-known fact that hospital pharmacies seem to be, and that's why we used to use the term clinical pharmacists. And we said it's unfair, because we're all pharmacists. So, and that's why we want to have something that is standard, because yes, there are some pharmacists that will get better training in different areas, different pharmacies, different placements.
I absolutely agree. I hate that term, clinical pharmacist, because I know it's sometimes used to describe just hospital pharmacists. And
or, I'm a community pharmacist.
Yeah. And I think I'm a clinical pharmacist. I think doing my services and having my patients, I think I'm just as clinical as anyone. I think the issue when you do your pre-reg year, as you said, is the pre-reg is usually just in one place. Well, now we're all talking about integrated care. We're talking about ICPs. I think if we're trying to create pharmacists that are going to plug that gap for the NHS, it's important that they see GP practice. It's important that they see hospital practice. Yeah. Well, so I think for the pre-reg year, there shouldn't be a single pre-reg that is in a single sector.
It should be more like, so Wales, they do it across all three.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the most beneficial way to do
that
it.
That is.
Because not only does it make you more well-rounded, it actually allows you to really understand which career you want to go into. As a community pharmacist, I felt like I got so good at being in community that I was like, why would I look?
If you put me in a hospital, I'd be like, what?
If you put me in a hospital, I just would freeze. I'd probably...
And that's exactly what I'm saying is changing. That's what's changing now. Because now they have, throughout the degree, they have cross-sector placements. And that has to start from the first year, because 1 year is not enough to...
No.
From the first year, they work different placements. Mm. And that's something that in the next 4 years, you see a massive difference.
So I want to talk now specifically about post-registration training, so specifically about independent prescribing training. I know that's something that is at the forefront of many people's minds. Can I just get a quick show of hands among our panel and among our audience? Is anyone already an independent prescriber in this? Yeah, we've got one here, one in the audience. And how many of you are training or are about to start training to become an independent prescriber? We've got a couple here. Okay, great. And how many of you are really scared at the prospect of doing it? Yeah, you as well. So putting it back to our panel, what needs to change about the independent prescribing program to encourage more pharmacists to take it up? Because I'm surprised, actually. I was expecting, there's been such a drive towards it, I was expecting we'd have more of our audience who'd be doing it. I'd be interested to hear from our audience as well what's stopping people. But we'll hear from our panel first.
There just needs to be a better program for it. So, like, we can all follow a very easy kind of, like, schedule. So you need to do X, Y, Z. But at the moment, it's okay. You need to balance finding a university, balance finding a designated supervisor. And on top of that, I'm sure there's other things that I'm missing, but I just don't know what I'm missing. So it's actually like sourcing X, Y, Z, where it should all just be squished together. You shouldn't really have to be looking externally and, quite frankly, paying a fee to find a designated supervisor. It should just be a lot more straightforward. And I feel like the HEE should just have a solid process.
I think to cut the HEE some slack, I think they have done quite a lot of work when it comes to DPPs and IPs and providing funding and making it easier for pharmacists to access that funding. There is one big problem with the whole IP thing, is that when the ARS was first brought up, all it did was pull pharmacists from community into GPs.
I wondered when we were going to start hearing about the ARS.
the funding just pulled pharmacists from community into GPs. And what that did with the rest of the pharmacists that were left in community is, why am I going to do an IP if I'm going to stay in a community pharmacy?
Do you feel left behind?
No, it's not about being left behind. It's what is the purpose of it for me? Because if I work at a community pharmacy and I'm still dispensing 1,000 items a month, I'm still having to check, I'm still having to do all these services, what am I going to use the IP for?
Yeah, you've got to kind of like rationalize it a little bit in terms of
it's like
costs.
They need to give the space for pharmacists to need the IP in order, because you can give me all the funding, you can give me all the help I want. If I spend a year of my life studying something, and I'm just going to end up back in a community pharmacy checking. What's the purpose of doing that learning?
At the end of the day, you rarely even finish all the dispensing that you're meant to be doing. So when are you going to have time to start doing consultations to prescribe medicines as well? Like, you're just not.
Seen a hand up in our audience, so we can get the mic again, please. That'd be great.
So my motivation to become an independent prescriber is just because I know I had an awful experience in pre-reg. And being an independent prescriber will allow you to be able to be someone else's DPP, so you could help someone else's journey be smoother. And I would have wanted that for myself, and I would love that for the future, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm actually really interested. So you're becoming an independent prescriber. What would you like to do with that? Where is it that you're kind of wanting to go with your career with that?
Well, with my the way I've got into it is I got into Wales, and they do a 2-year program where you can do your first year, you don't have to worry about getting a DPP, and then the second year they'll arrange one for you. So it's a very brilliant system, and so I went all the way there.
Yes.
They're
talking about it. It comes back the same thing I was talking about. Every time we talk about pharmacy, we need to look at two things. So you have your stakeholders. And one of the biggest challenges, many pharmacists would probably do independent prescribing if someone came out and said, we'll get you DPPs. It'll be so easy as soon as you join this course. The stakeholders are there as well, and they were going to accommodate you. The first thing is, if we had that, I would do independent prescribing. I'll be the first one to do that. So, but at that level, the stakeholders need to come forward and have those, and it's challenging with the current market. So we need to have that first. So that's the first part, is stakeholders. And then the second part is your personal motivation. As pharmacists, we don't do things unless we have to do things. The reason why we read the BNF is because we had an exam. After that, we never touched it again. So something has to happen.
She's like, what do you mean? I read it every day. It's on my bedside table.
Yes, this is daily routine. I read it because I teach it now. Yeah. But something has to happen to make you want to do it. My take is in a few years' time, when you have, by 2026, when all pharmacists have all these clinical skills and they're all independent prescribers, then there'll be pressure based on what happens to those that don't have it. So that'll be a push. And then apart from that, you might have your own personal motivation. I would love to be an independent prescriber. I would love to add more value, make a difference. So, but it has to be something at some point that will push everyone to have to.
Yeah, it's a bit harsh, but like, at the end of the day, when everyone's literally turning out as coming out as an IP, if you're not one, you're just going to be out. A bit.
So I'm a bit of a historian, and I know for the fact that this is not the first time that pharmacists being IP has been a thing. So if you go back, they did try an IP program for pharmacists. I think what you're saying about there being a need, and if everyone comes out as an IP, is going to drive. If there isn't the space for those IPs to go into, so if everyone is qualifying in 6 years' time and they're all ending up in the same community pharmacy, running the same services, doing the same job that everyone else is doing, I promise you all the historic pharmacists are going to say, I'm glad I didn't do it. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't waste that time. Until they organize, until pharmacy itself and community pharmacy starts creating spaces within community pharmacy for people to use their IP in those spaces, there will be no point in people doing it.
Yeah, that's why I come back with the stakeholders.
Yeah.
The stakeholders, and all of us have to be part of the system and provide those opportunities. Then you see more pharmacists doing this.
I'm just trying to imagine, like, being a pharmacist, checking all your boxes, clinically checking, of course, as well. And then someone walks in and is like, oh, yeah, could you quickly just diagnose this thing for me? And it's just like, right, okay, I've got a whole stack of prescriptions. Yeah. Let's go into the consultation room. I'll quickly diagnose you of this infection or something. I'll write the prescription as well. And it's just like, if you don't literally have a stream of patients coming in, like GP practices do, you're literally going to be breaking up your time between dispensing, okay, quickly fit that person in, and then go back to checking.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't really make sense. It needs
to
be... Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you
heard,
work.
And like something that I've always kind of like been trying to encourage is just more clinical services. Time. Yeah, yeah. It's just so.
I guess also the aspect of the finances is very tough now. Like for instance, at university, speaking again to one of the tutors, and one of the biggest challenges is getting students into workplaces because you need to fund that pharmacy to allow them time to then spend time giving good supervision to the students. I guess that's a reflection with everything. Because for us to have that, there's going to be a platform where we can train. Mm. But for that company to do that, there's going to be some financial investment from the NHS so that we can do all of these things. So there's different aspects of this, but it's all about that communication and finances into the system.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm really sorry. We're just scratching the surface of what is an incredibly complicated and heated topic, as we've heard. So thank you so much to our panelists. Before we stop, I would like to just ask our audience and our panel with a quick show of hands, yes, no, and on the fence. Do you think, after hearing all of this, that pharmacy education is fit for purpose? Let's have a show of hands for yes. Got a couple of hands? Nice, nice, nice. No? Some hands there too. And on the fence. Okay.
Not on the fence. But I think at university, I'll say yes, but after that.
So it's yes and no.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
There's no after that, yes. Yes and no. It's not a straight yes or no.
Guys, the debate is...
Yes or no. All right. No at the stakeholder level.
Okay, great.
Well, I'm no at the stakeholder level too.
See, they're still debating. The debate is finished and they're still debating. If you would like to join our panellists to carry on their debate, they'll be sticking around for a bit. C&D stand is just over there. I'm sure we can take them over there and you can join them in the debate as well. Thank you so much for joining this C&D Big Debate Live. Thank you so much to our panelists as well. Where can they find you, everyone? Well, they're here. Okay, we're done now. where can they find you?
For me, at revise_pharma. If you don't already follow us, what are you doing? No, I'm joking.
And I'm at the C&D stand behind you.
Stand 17, yeah. F17.
Thank you so much, everyone. Really, really great session. Thank you so much to our audience as well.